pushing folks around. Jeannie's in the backseat, polish and the crown. We're going down, going down.
Well, Bush 2 is in the White House, just passing tax reforms, giving trillions to his rich friends and stealing from the poor. Don't blink your eyes, he'll sail the storm.
Corporations in the Pentagon just cooking up the wars. Armies in the State House, they tear the world up in the old con, in the old con.
Well, Poppy Bush and Baby Bush and the party of God, that spelled G for guns and O for oil and D for drugs. They gave us 911. Was an inside job.
George Bush in the White House, spreading fear across the land, tearing up our Bill of Rights as fast as they can. War on terror, such a scam.
Well, Collins at the UN just showing diagrams. Well, can't you see those weapons just scattered across the land? He's making deals, he's shaking hands.
At the World Bank, making new demands. We'll take your oil, you keep the sand.
We got Abu Ghraib in the Middle East, Guantanamo down south. Congress got that Patriot Act just shoved on down its mouth. They took our Constitution and threw it out.
Bill Karl Rove in the White House, and they say he's Bush's brain. All his corporate buddies and their voting machines. We cast our votes, they wipe them clean.
And preemptive war, the Fourth Reich's here in America.
King George in the White House is pushing folks around. Chains in the backseat, polishing the crown. We're going down, we're going down.
Good evening. Good evening. This is Truth Quest, and thanks, Emily, for another great program, Chicks Voices, that had a few roosters scattered in there tonight. And this is KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida. And we're also a community-supported radio streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any other past programs, they're available from a link off of khen.org at www.givemesometruth.info. KHEN Radio and Truth Quest with Melody is my co-host. Truth Quest with Melody. My co-host tonight is Dr. Eric Carlstrom, and that was him performing a song, White House Blues, on his Bluegrass Conspiracy album. And our guest tonight is Kevin Barrett. And are you guys there?
I'm sure there, Melody. How are you doing?
Okay, and Eric, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, thanks. Great. This works a lot better than the other board we had. It's wonderful to have some newer technology. So, and Kevin, he is a radio journalist on GCN Network and No Lies Radio and RBN and WTPERN. And he's an author of Truth Jihad, My Epic Struggle Against the 9/11 Big Lie, and editor of 9/11 and American Empire, Christian, Jews, and Muslims Speak Out. Eric, would you like to go ahead and take over there?
Yeah, for the benefit of our listeners, I'll just say a little bit more about our guest from what I know, which is that he used to be a professor at the University of Wisconsin. And is that not correct, Kevin? And you came under some considerable criticism and heat for your stance on 9/11. And were you actually terminated? Is that correct?
Well, not exactly. See, I wasn't really a professor. I was a lecturer. And those are people who do the same work the professors do, but they only get paid half as much. and I didn't
they don't have the job security.
Right, no job security. So I was on a semester-by-semester contract, and they did not fire me, even though 61 state legislators wrote them a letter asking them to, and Fox News was banging the drums to get me fired. But I didn't get fired. I finished teaching the course. I taught the week of the 16-week Islam course that was devoted to the so-called War on Terror and alternate views of 9/11, well, a variety of views of 9/11. But after that semester, I didn't get rehired.
You're also running aren't you also running for Congress?
Yeah, that's right. I lost that job in the academy, so I'm looking for a new job in Washington, D.C.
Oh, boy.
You're running for a state congressman? So you're running for Congress in
U.S.
Wisconsin?
Yeah,
U.S. Congress. Okay. Great. Well, I wish you well with that. But meanwhile, you've been very busy with a radio program called The Dynamic Duo with Dr. James Fetzer, who is a co-founder of the Scholars for 911 Truth. You've been doing this for, what, a couple years now?
Well, yeah. I've had these three radio shows for about a year and a half now on the average. I've got the one on GCN. Jim Fetzer does 3 days a week. I do 2 days a week. And, of course, we don't have exactly the same points of view. You know, there's some people who give me a hard time because they think I agree with Jim on everything. And far from it. You know, we're totally different people. He's a philosophy of science guy. I'm a humanities guy. He's an atheist. I'm a practicing Muslim, and so on and so forth. He's a liberal Democrat. I'm a libertarian. But we enjoy disagreeing, and we have a really lively show. Then I have these two other shows on We the People Radio Network, now on Wednesday nights, and on Republic Broadcasting on Saturday night. And I do a five-minute news headline show on NoLiesRadio.org.
And that's on Pacifica?
Yeah, that's it's linked to Pacifica. They play a mixture of Pacifica stuff and 9/11 Truth stuff.
Okay, so you must be, in this capacity, you must be rather well-educated as to how the 9/11 movement is progressing. Could you sum it up for us and tell us what you think the state of the 9/11 movement is in terms of what we know now, in terms of what we might expect in terms of getting a legitimate investigation into 9/11, how we might possibly get the guilty parties identified and then brought to trial?
Well, we have a whole bunch of possible avenues, including this recent impeachment resolution submitted by Denis Kucinich. The last three articles of impeachment deal with 9/11 and the 9/11 cover-up. One of them seeks to impeach Bush because he had all sorts of warnings from virtually all the other governments in the world and did nothing about those warnings before 9/11. And then another article of impeachment is against Bush for covering up the crimes of 9/11 or engaging in obstruction of justice, which he obviously did. And then the third one is for endangering the health of the 9/11 first responders. So if everybody can call their Congress critter and tell them to support Denis Kucinich's impeachment resolution, that would be a big step towards getting towards the truth of 9/11. And there are a couple of other initiatives out there, too. There's the New York City 9/11 Ballot Initiative, which is on the web at nyc911initiative.org. And then there's also Elias Davidson, an Icelandic scholar and human rights activist, has submitted a brief to the UN calling for a UN investigation. So those are just three of the possibilities. We might also get some war crimes trials in The Hague before too long. I think we will bring them to justice. The only question is how.
How and when.
And when.
Whether there would be a fair trial, even if it does go to trial. At least to shine a spotlight back on it would be helpful, because there has been so much research now that would be pertinent to this. Would you agree? And what would you suggest is the research that we would need to include in that kind of investigation?
Well, there's all kinds of research out there, but I think the most important framework for this is Elias Davidson's work. He shows that the U.S. government violated its own law and international law when it failed to provide any evidence whatsoever against the 19 men that it accused of this crime, this horrendous crime. It should have immediately provided the official passenger list to show that these people were on those planes. It did not. It should have immediately showed and gotten a chain of custody of the boarding passes, and it did not. It should have gotten the CATV videos showing all of these people getting on these planes. It did not. And it should have gotten immediate eyewitness testimony from the airline personnel who allegedly would have boarded these people on these planes, but it did not. And we're left with none of the obvious evidence that would have been immediately collected, given a chain of custody and made public to prove that these 19 men did the deed. But in fact, because none of that evidence apparently even exists, we can be certain beyond a reasonable doubt that none of those 19 men, nor any Arabs or Muslims, were even on those planes, nor were there any hijackings, much less suicide hijackings. So that's the bottom line here. And the rest is gravy. The rest is that we now know that the World Trade Center was taken down in a controlled demolition. We are reasonably certain that no 757 hit the Pentagon. It was a military attack. Apparently a bomb went off there, and we don't know if something from the air hit. Apparently it did. Recent evidence suggests that there was an overflight of some large airplane, which did not hit the Pentagon, but instead flew over it. And then it's highly improbable that there was any airliner crash in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. We haven't found any of the evidence that there should have been if there was indeed such a crash. So essentially, the official story has been proven to be a big lie in every aspect, and we need to really, you don't even need an investigation to jail all of these people, including the 9/11 Commission people, for obstruction of justice.
Yeah, of course I agree. Now, going back to this guy, Goliath Davidson, I haven't heard of him. Is there a website that he has or something that people could look at?
Yeah, his name is Elias Davidson, and you can Google him up. His website has a weird name, and I can't remember it, but if you just Google his name, it's E-L-I-A-S, last name Davidson.
Okay.
But with two S's.
Elias Davidson, yeah.
Elias Davidson with two S's in his last name.
Okay, very good. Okay, so you gave a talk at Jim Fetzer's excellent symposium conference last August 2007, which was entitled Science and Politics of 911, What's Controversial and What's Not. And I'll just plug that right now and say that anybody listening can get a copy of that if they go to www.911scholars.org, which is Dr. Fetzer's website, or 911weknow.com, also sells that video. 14 hours of talks, and one of the talks is you. I think I recall, and I watched the whole thing, and I remember you talked about a book which was written, I think, back in the 60s, on how to stage a coup, how to take over a country. And I wondered if you would be willing to talk about that a little bit.
Sure, yeah. That book is called Coup d'Etat, A Practical Handbook, and it's written by Edward Luttbach. Now, Luttbach is the leading neoconservative military strategist. He went to school with Leo Strauss, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, and all those guys who came out of the University of Chicago under the tutelage of Dr. Leo Strauss, who was the leading student of the top Nazi philosopher, Carl Schmitt. Strauss, though he was even more extreme than Schmitt, he was more Nazi than the Nazis. He had to flee Nazi Germany because he was Jewish, and he came to the University of Chicago and created what is really an American Nazi movement. They call themselves neoconservatives, but their philosophy is straight out of Hitler. And so those people have been planning to abolish the Constitution and abolish constitutional democracy in the U.S. and replace it with a presidential dictatorship for the last five decades. And anyway, Luttbach wrote this book, Coup d'Etat, A Practical Handbook, to describe how to seize power in a coup d'Etat in the United States of America. And the way you do it, he said, is to do it in secret. You know, you don't just announce yourself. Instead, you seize power suddenly in a kind of a shocking way. You marginalize the opposition. You make sure that the people in the positions of power know that they're going to keep getting their paychecks and that they better go along with you. You try to avoid bloodshed because that incites opposition. And you try to get the opposition, if there is any, feeling marginalized and fighting amongst themselves. So the whole recipe for 9/11, everything but the demolition of the Twin Towers, is right there in Luttbach's 1968 book, Coup d'Etat.
Excellent. Well, I actually followed up on that and got the copy of that book and found you can get it for quite cheap on Amazon.com. So if anybody cares to follow up on that, I think your connection with the neocons, who of course have been running the Bush administration, and Leo Strauss, this neo-Nazi University of Chicago political science professor who has trained a generation or two generations of American politicians, including Paul Wolfowitz and a whole host of the people that are in the Bush team. So that, I think that's a very, very, that's a big smoking gun. There's so much evidence, as you said. Now, you also wrote an article back, I think, for Global Outlook some time ago, stating that 9-1-1 was a psychological operation. That's correct, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a classic example of what they call trauma-based mind control. The kind of demonic individuals who are interested in imposing their own power on other people's minds have discovered that they can control the human mind by traumatizing people. For instance, they take children, inflict horrific abuse on children, abuse so horrific that the children retreat into their own minds and split off and get multiple personalities, and then these multiple personalities can be controlled by the mind control agents. And 9/11 was an example of this kind of trauma-based mind control. They traumatized the nation by blowing up the World Trade Center in front of our eyes with 3,000 people inside, and used that trauma to infantilize us, that is, to make us feel like helpless children. And then they stepped in, the voice of the media and the government stepped in as the authoritarian parent figure, calming us and telling us what to do and telling us what happened. We had no idea what really happened, and you know, we watched these buildings explode at free fall speed, and then that traumatized us and made us infantilized, and then the voice of the authority stepped in and said, oh, they just fell down because planes hit them, and we all kind of said, yes, because planes hit them.
Would you, so
you're talking trauma-based mind control, which is a form of mind control, obviously. Now, many of us who've done some looking into the record of the past CIA operations are familiar with MK Ultra, which is a whole series of mind-controlled experiments that occurred back in the 50s and 60s, I believe. Would you relate this perhaps to MK Ultra, a type of research?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the CIA has been doing mind-control research in a big way since World War II, which is, of course, when the CIA came into being. It was originally the OSS. In the 1950s, they spent a vast amount of money in this MK Ultra program designed to figure out how to completely control the human mind. One gauge of success was if they were able to create an assassin who wouldn't even know that he was an assassin. And the first book on this was John Mark's book, The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, which came out in the 70s, I believe, and exposed a lot of this. What's interesting about it is that the paper trail that they revealed when William Colby took over CIA and tried to expose some of their dirty laundry, they showed us what happened in the 50s, and you see this paper trail of their mind control research where they're dosing each other with LSD and giving people shock therapy and things like that. Right up through the early 60s, and then just when it looks like it's becoming successful, especially with hypnotism, that's when the paper trail disappears, and it apparently goes underground. And then a few years later, we had Bobby Kennedy killed by a team of CIA assassins, and the patsy, Sirhan Sirhan, was apparently hypnotized. He had absolutely no memory of what he did, and he had no memory of having any animosity towards Bobby Kennedy. And later it was discovered while he was in prison that he is about the world's most hypnotizable person. He's in the 99.9 percentile of hypnotic susceptibility. In fact, Sidney Gottlieb, who used to be the top hypnotist for the CIA, has publicly bragged that Sirhan was one of his clients. Now, of course, Sirhan didn't go to hypnotherapy, so that statement pretty much suggests that he was a CIA client. And there's probably been a whole lot more of this than we even really know about. There are stories of these hypnotized multiple personality people being used for everything from drug running to prostitution to even being diplomatic couriers. There's apparently a fairly sizable segment of the intelligence community that actually does this stuff, and they also study how to get, you know, how to torture people, how to use torture to control people's minds and make them do what you want. And of course, 9/11 was the ultimate example of sort of a massive form of mental torture to get the whole country, maybe even the whole world, to do what they wanted.
Well, this is indeed a pretty grim topic, and to go into it, one has to have, I guess, some intestinal fortitude or some courage. But what you're saying suggests rather strongly that the CIA was involved in the 911 operation. We could call it, I guess, Operation 911. In that case, given the known power and the reach of the CIA, what chance do you suppose we have of actually bringing this trial, this case, to justice?
I think we have an excellent chance. I think the reason they had to do something this extreme is because they're running really scared. We've got new communications technologies now, such as the Internet and digital media like DVD copying. We can spread information around in a way that we never could in the past. And I think they saw that coming. I think people are evolving and becoming less controllable. They're capable of living without constant fear and, you know, constant fight or flight syndrome, constant identifying with their nation and hating the enemy. And so as people have evolved and gotten beyond this kind of control, the controllers are freaking out and kind of doing a last desperate attempt to get the sheep back into the corral. But I think it's too late. Cat's out of the bag, and I think we are going to break out of this this mind corral that they're trying to create for us and put a lot of these people, certainly not all of the criminals, but a bunch of them can be put on trial, and they can be an example to the others, just like happened in Nuremberg. And I'm pretty sure that something along those lines will happen sometime in the next few years, maybe the next decade at the most.
Well, I appreciate your optimism, and I certainly hope that this will happen, because nothing works like justice. But, you know, the fact is that the killers of John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King have not been brought to justice. So if indeed the perps, the perpetrators of this operation are brought to justice, this will be a major, major victory, I would say, for humanity.
It will be a landmark. In fact, you're right. It's not just JFK, but there's virtually been nobody ever held accountable and brought to justice for any of the major false flag operations in history, and there are many, many dozens of them. And, of course, that's why they think they can get away with it. But I think on 9/11 they bit off more than they could chew. They really underestimated the awareness of the people. And once the cat's out of the bag on 9/11, there's no way to put it back for any more false flag operations. So it's really important that we continue to raise public consciousness about 9/11, which is the world's most obvious botched false flag operation, besides being the world's bloodiest. Building 7 is enough in itself. You know, a couple of minutes of watching that demolition and watching Silverstein confess, looking at a, you know, New York Times headline about Silverstein making more than $4 billion profit on his six-week investment in the asbestos-ridden World Trade Center. You know, it just takes a few minutes of research to see the handwriting on the wall with 9/11. So, and more people are waking up. Everybody's changing to the same side. There's nobody who ever thought that it was an inside job that's gone back and said, oh, well, now on second thought, I don't think it is. Well, maybe there's one, but he's probably a plant. But, you know, the movement is all towards the 9/11 truth side of things, and that movement is not slowing. It's kind of slowly accelerating like a landslide just starting to get going down the mountain, and there's no stopping it. So I think it's pretty inevitable that this thing is coming out. It's just a matter of when in the next few years or the next decade, and how many of the real perpetrators are we going to be able to hold accountable.
How do you deal with, and I'm sure you have friends, as I do, and family even, and colleagues in academics who are quite smart, who refuse to look at these issues, they just dismiss it out of hand, because that's nonsense, that's some conspiracy wacko theory. And these are smart people, but they have some psychological blockage going on. I guess it has to do with their investment in their career or their fear or their or something, or their patriotism or something. How do you deal with people that are very, very smart and refuse to look at this?
Well, that's a good question. Of course, they're all different, you know, and so I deal with them differently. For example, two such people that I've recently dealt with are Noam Chomsky and Frank Greening. Both of them are very smart. Chomsky is a brilliant linguist, or at least he was when he had all his marbles. I'm not sure he does anymore. But anyway, you know, I tried to have him on my radio show, and I tried to be really nice to him and got into an email dialogue with him. And then he started accusing me of lying falsely. And I showed him what I had said in the email, and that wasn't what he thought I had said. But he still refused to apologize, and he kept accusing me of lying. So I went ahead and published the entire correspondence on my website, and people can read that by going to BarrettForCongress.us, and then you go to the must-read articles link, and then the articles by Kevin, and you'll find it there. And you'll see I dealt fairly harshly with Chomsky after really, you know, extending the hand of peace and friendship for a long time, and listening to his grousing and griping and attacks for a very long time. I finally gave up on him and thought it's more important to expose his fallacious and depraved thinking than to keep trying to butter him up. So that's one way to deal with a very smart person who's in complete denial. Well, Chomsky may or may not be in complete denial. Who knows what game he's playing? But the other guy, Frank Greening, is the world's leading independent scientist who has attempted to support the official conspiracy theory of the destruction of the World Trade Center against the 9/11 truth movement. And he's been doing this for a couple of years now, and he's gradually gotten more and more open-minded and more open to the 9/11 truth argument. So I used to be kind of harsh on him, right? I kind of gave him a hard time in a friendly way, and now I brought him on the radio just Monday on GCN for a friendly conversation, friendly little debate, and I think he's coming closer and closer. I wouldn't be surprised if Frank Greening actually comes out for 9/11 truth this year. It's a real possibility, and I think being relatively kind and being open to friendly dialogue with people like that usually is the best way to help move them along.
Yeah, I'm sure you're aware that Barry Zwicker, who has been kind of one of the pioneer journalists, movie journalists on this issue, who's also written a book called Powers of Deception, has a chapter dedicated to Noam Chomsky. I think he calls it The Shame of Noam Chomsky and the Left Gatekeepers or something like that.
That's right.
And I personally, in my reading, I think my thinking on Chomsky has done a 180-degree reversal. He was one of my heroes for many years, and now I really believe he's one of them in the sense that he fulfills a function for the New World Order team, which I think 9/11 was a major event play in order to bring about the one world government that the New World Order team wants to bring. I think Noam Chomsky functions within that system. So this is not a question of him. I think it's a question of him being on the other side, which is why he would be, I think, so abusive to you and not willing to listen to reason. I think he was exactly the same on the Kennedy assassination. And let me just, before I get your response on that, let me just say to you and also to our listeners that I have a website out that I've been working on, and it's, if anybody wants to write it down, it's kind of a long name, but I've got an awful lot of information in there that I think ties in 9/11 with the game plan of the New World Order crowd, the globalists, the one-on-one world government. And it's http://911newworldorderfiles.googlepages.com/home2. And that'll get you to the home page, and then from there there's another 28 pages. But to me, this is a very big conspiracy that, you know, ties it with international bankers and the Committee of 300 and the CIA, MI6, Mossad, all the really, really powerful institutions of the world. So no wonder we're having a hard time getting the truth out. And I think for this reason we'll have a real hard time getting justice. But maybe if we could go back to Noam Chomsky, if you would want to respond to what I said about that.
Well, yeah, I don't know whether he's working for the bad guys or not. I know Barry Zwicker seems to kind of suspect that. I just had Barry on my show on Saturday night on RBN, and we did talk about that. Barry's opinion is if it, you know, quacks like a duck and, you know, walks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And Chomsky does do that. He covers up the most important crimes of the national security state or the New World Order or whatever you want to call them. and he does it in a clearly intellectually dishonest, disingenuous way. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's possible also that he just has a severe emotional block. There are various sources that could stem from. For instance, he does have a very strong emotional bond with the State of Israel, where he spent some time in his youth working on a kibbutz. He still says that was the most wonderful part of his life. And, you know, as my co-editor in the book 9/11 in the American Empire, Volume 2, Sandra Lubarsky wrote so beautifully in that book, that, you know, as an American Jew who with a real emotional tie to Israel, it was very, very hard for her to even entertain the thought that Zionists or perhaps Israeli intelligence could have had a role in 9/11. And because she's terrified that this, if it were known, would lead to pogroms and discrimination and perhaps all kinds of, you know, horrible mistreatment of Jews. So that's another possibility, that Chomsky knows or suspects that at some level, perhaps not even consciously, and that would be responsible. You know, that's why he says things like, well, even if you proved Building 7 was a demolition, that would just prove that Bin Laden did it. Of course, that makes no sense. The FBI has even said that Bin Laden is not wanted for 9/11 because they have no hard evidence against him. So, you know, why would you blame Bin Laden if you could prove that Building 7 came down in a controlled demolition? I mean, it would make more sense to blame the Easter Bunny. But that's Chomsky's illogic for you.
Kevin?
Well, it really is a phenomenon, and I kind of hate to dwell on this too much for those of our listeners who haven't heard of Noam Chomsky, but Noam Chomsky has been a towering figure in the political left and his critiques of American foreign policy. And he had enormous, I think, kind of intellectual capital going into 9/11. And then very shortly after 9/11 occurred, he wrote a little book in which he basically, kind of agreed with the official, what we now know is a lie, official myth. So it's as if he was almost single-handedly able to kind of disarm the political left or keep the political left confused for a couple of years because he was such a influential person. So the fact that he has, you know, turned into this kind of babbling fool regarding the evidence and the whatnot is fascinating and very something I want to try to understand.
I'm sure.
But going back to Building 7, you said something about the World Trade Center coming down in a controlled demolition. Now, you've had Judy Wood on your show, so I presume you've heard her talk about directed energy weapons. I just would like to know, I guess our time's almost up, what you think about her theory about directed energy weapons as being a mechanism to bring down World Trade Center 1 and 2.
Well, you know, I don't think she's provided the hard evidence that could be taken to court to prove that yet, as far as I can see. But I think she's raised some good questions. I don't know much about her recent work with this Hutchinson guy, but from what I hear and what I look, you know, just a quick look at her website, doesn't really give me that much confidence in it. But I do think that her questions about certain aspects, some of the pictures and some of the reports about what happened during and after the demolition of the World Trade Center are very, very interesting, and I think she's provided a great service. It's too bad that some people are so upset with even raising the possibility of these things that they've tried to silence her and slander her, and that's too bad. I think we need to stick together in the 9/11 Truth Movement. It's fine to critique people. It's fine to point out that, yeah, actually, you know, I agree. I think Stephen Jones has better scientific evidence for demolition right now than Judy Wood has. But that doesn't mean that we need to pick a team and attack the other side. That kind of behavior is extremely childish, and it's really sad that there's so many anonymous little twerps out there hiding behind handles on the internet attacking people like Judy Wood, or, you know, on the other side attacking people like Stephen Jones, instead of using their brains and trying to think critically about all this.
Well, I think we need to bring our interview to a close here, and we could probably go on quite a while. And I really enjoyed having you on, Kevin. and maybe we can do
it. Yeah, thank you very much, Kevin, for what you're doing. I sure appreciate it, and it's great to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much, Eric, and thank you, Melody. It's great. I hope to have you on my show sometime.
Oh,
that'd be fine.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank
you. Good night, Kevin and Melody.
Okay, good night.
Okay, good night.